Thank you for joining the call today, which is for JP Morgan Equity High Touch Clients of Research Advisory or MiFID Out of Scope Clients. This call is for institutional investors only. Therefore, if you are a corporate client or a member of the press, please kindly disconnect from the call. I will now pass you over to the JP Morgan host for this event, Céline Pannuti.
Thank you. Good morning or good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today. I am Céline Pannuti and I head the consumer staples research at JP Morgan in Europe. As part of our Fireside Chat series, I am delighted today to be in Paris at Danone headquarters and to be welcomed by Antoine de Saint-Affrique, CEO of Danone. Bonjour Antoine.
Bonjour Céline.
Antoine, I'm in your headquarters today, but earlier this morning we were at Saclay in your R&D center, which we visited. I must say, I think we saw a lot of dynamism and it was interesting to see how a health and a science platform at Danone plays a role. So maybe if you could share your views how R&D fits into the Danone strategy.
What we've seen this morning, for those of you that didn't have the opportunity to look at what was presented, it's available on our site, is fundamentally a deep dive into what we are doing from an R&D standpoint. R&D first is at the heart of Danone, is at the heart of Danone history. I mean, whether you take Danone yogurt, was invented over a century ago by Daniel Carasso, together with Menshikov, a Nobel Prize, realizing what you can do through ferments to enhance and leverage the power of milk and to fight actually malnutrition and dysentery in Barcelona. That's exactly the same with the IMF business. It's also about 100 years ago, where, I mean, finding ways of contributing to, feeding properly infants are making a difference to mortality was at the heart of how our IMF business is born. So it is something that is very, very central to who we are. What we have shared with a number of analysts this morning, it was a visit to our newest center, which is a very large center located in the midst of an ecosystem, which is an ecosystem of universities, which is an ecosystem of startups, which is an ecosystem of high-tech companies, which is our global lab, which is a dual lab with a lab that we have in Utrecht. And we shared the science that is powering actually everything we do. I mean, if you summarize in a couple of words what took us a full morning, and the first thing is we have really a cutting edge science and technology from everything around fermentation. I mean, you have a unique bank of fermentables, so unique abilities to combine ferments to proteins, and not only the proteins you find in hyperneutral, but proteins that go into oncology nutrition, which is one significant part of our business. So the way you combine proteins, with other ingredients to be able to provide unique benefits to patients or to consumers. We talked about data and IT and how data is enabling the way we create relationship with the consumer. So the first message, which is not only R&D and science are central to what we do, but we believe that we have cutting-edge science and technology at Danone. In everything we do, patients and consumers are at the center. So it starts with our patients and consumers. Understanding the needs of the patients, understanding the needs of the consumer, understanding also how you create a user experience that, in the case of patients, is enabling compliance to a food regime, And in the case of consumers, is creating delight and therefore repurchase. From this understanding of patient and consumer, we've defined a number of benefit platforms. We've shared a number of those platforms this morning. And out of those platforms, we derive products that are based on scientific engine with a goal which is superiority and differentiation. So we had a deep dive on our gut health. We had our deep dives on proteins. We said a couple of things on fermentation. Besides our benefit platforms enabled by our technology, we talked a lot about our execution discipline end to end. So our clarity on what is the benefit, superiority when it comes to the technology platform, superiority also in discipline in the way you execute from the science to the factory and from the factory to the shelf or to the hospital or to the pharmacy. There's a clear end-to-end approach on what we are doing. I think last thing we tried to answer was, well, how is it different from what we did in the past? More focus, certainly a very clear priority given again to our research and development as a core engine to our business model. And hopefully we've conveyed also the degree of passion, enthusiasm and knowledge that is around in our organization.
So I think, yeah, there was certainly a lot of passion. And I must say as well, I was quite positively surprised by the execution and the focus on that during the presentation. But maybe that gets me to my next question, which is if you could, Antoine, you've been there for at Danone for 18 months. The Renew strategy has been announced just a year ago, and you are executing this multi-year program in an environment that is effectively quite volatile. I think from the external, it's somehow difficult to, of course, you are on track with your full-year guide, but try to understand whether this turnaround is taking hold and is on track. So with your inside eyes, can you tell us what has changed? What is changing culturally? What are the green shoots that, investors can get confidence that the turnaround is taking hold?
Well, I mean, there are plenty of things that are changing. Well, we've obviously changed a number of visible things. We've changed some aspects of the organization. Unwinding part of what had been forecasted with Local First, recreating a real research development food safety organization, bringing a world-class leader at the top of that, doing the same with operations, bringing there to a world-class leader. We have been obviously fixing the governance, and we've changed 100% of the board in less than 18 months. Getting to a quality of board, an independence, a parity of board that is probably one of the best in Europe. But I think more importantly, we started changing the culture. And the way you change the culture is, you do it in many different ways. You do it for reward. So we've changed our short and long-term incentive to refocus them to be more linked to value creation, also to be very clear on what drives that value creation. We've changed the culture also in making it again an outward-looking culture. And that you do in many different ways. You do with the topics you discussed in the executive committee. So we started discussing again in every committee the market shares is one of the first topics right after safety and quality we discuss. And you do that also with the way you run your company. So we are back in the field. Together with my CFO, every 90 days at the end of the quarter, we visit all the regions. And we visit stores, we visit hospitals, we meet with the youngsters in the company. We discuss business and we do it again and again and again. So we have the seventh round there. So in doing that, you refocus the company to the outside. You give a certain rhythm to the company. You give a focus that becomes, again, an operational focus and one of discipline. A couple of proof points that are very encouraging. I mean, Céline, you told us, I mean, a year ago, we gave you that on. A year ago, I mean, it was just at the start of the war in Ukraine. Inflation was close to zero. The probably the best proof of the cultural change is despite massive inflation, despite massive external volatility, we started reinvesting behind our brands materially when it comes to NPS. So we moved, or we started putting the base to a business model that is a much longer term business model. So things are moving. It's a multi-year, it's a multi-year journey. We take it in a very, very disciplined way, and we go to the bottom of the issues that we are facing. So in some cases, we are restructuring ranges. We are restarting to invest behind our brands. We put much more focus on the quality of our execution.
So one of the key areas to get that turnaround is really high on the investors' agenda is how the EDP will be turned around. And yourself, you said that EDP has to contribute to the EBIT growth of the company. I think there's as well a question whether it is a more of a commoditized category. So how much profitability can you make there? So I'm going to ask you to answer that. Because on top, I think what really transpired today from this morning was the value add that you want to bring to the category. So what is your answer to that commoditization? How can you bring value add? And what does it mean in the midterm in terms of the category profitability? Are we talking about going back to mid-teens as a category? Is it okay to do premiumization at a time where maybe the consumer or the economy are going to be going into a tough patch?
So lots of questions. Yes. Lots of questions, Sally. I think the first thing we said a year ago at the time of the start of Renew is if only we are capturing the full growth of our category. So before even we talk about commoditization, not commoditization, we have been losing share in the category. We were in some ways or in large parts of the world the category creator, and we most likely didn't do a proper job at driving the category. And on top of that, we didn't benefit from the underlying growth of the category. Once you've said that, and hopefully for those that could watch the videos this morning was a good demonstration of that, there are plenty of opportunity of added value in the category. Back to what I was saying with the Danone yogurt, which by the way is not a yogurt, it's a Danone. Danone yogurt is born as a medical product. It is a product that, because of its unique technology, is capable of delivering for a very modest price. And this answers your question when it comes to the revenue pressure, is capable of delivering extraordinary benefits. I mean, when I was a child in France, when you get antibiotic treatment, you get at the same time a Danone yogurt because it helps reconstitute the flora. You would talk about the calcium that you get out of a Danone. So, I mean, even at the more affordable part of our portfolio, we haven't done a specially good job at claiming our science, at claiming our differentiation. And that's what we are restarting to do by being much more systematic in the way we look at science, we underpin our claims, and we develop claims that create superiority with the consumer. That's true with the Danone white yogurt, which costs 25 cents. It is true all along the price ladder. I mean, you take a Danacol, which has, by the way, very powerful claims when it comes to cholesterol reduction. It comes at a premium, and the premium is driving, it has a real, real benefit that justifies the premium. You have exactly the same with our protein range. I mean, before, if you were either in sports or like my boys, you try to sculpt your body, what you were doing is you were buying a big bag of whey protein. It's not the best consumer experience in the world. If you can have it in the form of a yogurt, if you can have it in the form of a drink, if it can become a really pleasant experience while delivering you 18 grams or 25 grams of protein, you justify a premium. Because you bring to the consumer a real, a great product experience, because it tastes fantastically, but also a great benefit when it comes to what it brings you, and goes end. It's the case with Actimel, it's the case with Activia. So the name of the game is making sure that through science, through being very systematic on product superiority, and on the way we create our claims, we are lucky in some way. We capture the value our mixes can bring at every price point on the scale. So obviously, Danacol is very premium. A Danone white yogurt is very affordable, although it's premium to the private label. And you walk the entire ladder of price through superior consumer experience and superior claims. So I'm very bullish on EDP, and I mean in general and EDP Europe in particular, because number one, the category is growing, and we haven't fully captured the growth of the category. Number two, we didn't do a particularly good job at claiming what our products are about. Number three, as you know, we have been underinvesting, and we have been unclear on the way we were driving our brand equity. Where we started doing it, like in North America, you see a different dynamic. We just started in Spain a hard work of turnaround. We are moving from supporting 10 brands to supporting 5 brands. Reassessing the role of a master brand, being very clear on the way you segment below that master brand, cutting away, and that we do across Europe, cutting away innovation that just goes in the system, bringing complexity, and then you can start supporting your core and telling again your story.
One point that you mentioned at the very previous question was the inflation has gone from zero to double digit, but what we've seen is that the cost inflation is rolling over. So maybe not this year for Danone, and there are still some hedges to go through. But if we look at electricity, gas, oil prices, and a lot of the other commodities have started to roll over. So at some point, you will see that. So the question, I think, is how, given the extraordinary prices you have got, how your category are going to behave in the face of those costs rolling over. Especially, I think there is a bit of question mark about Europe. Politicians are also getting in the fray and demanding lower prices. And then retailers, privately bought in Europe as well, are there, and they may be faster at facing prices. So can you just tell us whether will Danone see deflation if their costs deflate?
Well, deflation, I mean, we are still talking about inflation, so it's a
yeah, slow, I know, but let's say
it's a slowdown of the price. But
going forward.
let me go back to your question. I mean, the first thing is I'm happy to say that in two instances, so last week and on Monday, the Minister of Economy in France has taken Danone as a good example of people contributing to manage inflation. So some people might be under pressure, but we got very good press from the authorities, which obviously feels good, but also is helpful. Once you've said that, a couple of things. The first thing is obviously we look at our pricing permanence and we look at the relationship between what's happening from the cost of goods and what's happening to the price competitiveness. So the name of the game is to be competitive in the market. I mean, to be competitive and being profitable. But being competitive in the market. So we will, where it makes sense, promote if and when we have the opportunity to promote. We will make sure that our prices are not out of whack, because having very big prices and very small volumes is not conducive of long-term value. So it's the first thing. The second thing, and I don't know if it's the question under your question, but it's a question I've been asked a number of times. If there are tailwinds, and if we benefit from tailwinds, we will reinvest those tailwinds into growing our markets. So our brands have been under-supported. We will invest, we will continue investing in our advertising, we'll continue investing in our innovations, we'll continue investing in all the competitiveness of our brands.
One area where I think, you know, there has been a lot of focus is obviously Europe. We are there. EDP Europe has seen a lot of volume decline, and there have been several reasons behind that, including your SKU rationalization. So maybe if you could tell us where you are on that journey in terms of SKU rationalization. Are we, you know, soon seeing the end of that program? And more importantly, I would say, if you could give us already green shoots, if you see them in Europe, do you think that the category will be back to volume growth at some point? And then when would that be? Whether there will also be, or are you also facing some tough comparison from a COVID-related burst in consumption?
To talk about COVID, and then yes, it had an effect on some things. Obviously, Actimel immunity works well in time of COVID. But there is there is a remnant of it. So it doesn't all disappear. The entire category didn't necessarily benefit in a disproportionate way from COVID. If you look at where we are, and we said it, and the capital market, we have been losing volumes for a large number of years, partly because also volume mix wasn't on the map. So as you know, we've put volume mix squarely on the map for the company. By the way, we've put it as part of the short-term incentive of the countries, which lends the message and focuses the mind. A couple of things. One is we have been, as I said it, doing a few things that not right in the past, moving to a lot of our different brands. I was saying 10 in our 10 in Spain, so you start dissolving the master brand into many sub brands, and you find yourself with 10 brands to support, which simply doesn't work. We were extremely tactical in innovations. You'd launch a very small thing that you wouldn't support consistently, so you create lots of churn, you create lots of complexity in your factories, and you simply don't move the needle. We have over 120 variants of our strawberry in Europe, which frankly speaking doesn't make any sense. What we've started doing in Europe, and has accelerated under the new leadership in Europe, is doing what you said, which is doing a couple of things. One is rationalizing our range. And you rationalize the range in two different ways. You rework the architecture of your range and your brand. You reassess how many brands you want to support. What is a master brand? What is a daughter brand? And you do that, by the way, in a way that is scientific. So you don't ask your mother-in-law. Do that by asking the consumer and by testing with the consumer. And then you build a plan of transition. The same story. You don't do that in one go. You do that in a phased way, so that you don't lose the consumer. The second thing is you clean your ranges. So it's the SKU rationalization you are talking. We started that SKU rationalization towards the end of last year. So if you anniversary it, you're going to see probably a normalization towards the end of this year. And there, in doing SKU rationalization, you do a couple of things. First, you remove complexity from your factories. So you're more efficient, you have longer runs, you buy better. So not only diminish your waste, You increase your capacity utilization, so your return on capital. But you get also better at retrofitting because you do it on the long run. The second thing is you offer better service to your customers, because less complexity, better return on the share. Third thing is you're in a position to support your brands differently. So we've done quite a bit. We will keep doing it. And then we will enter into a normal cycle where you need to do that every year because it's like as it grows regularly. But the transformation is taking place between the end of last year and say, end of quarter three, quarter four this year. Do we see our green shoots? Yes, we do see our green shoots, and you see them in different ways. I mean, you see them because you see your service levels going up. See your service levels going up because your complexity is going down. You see in some cases your penetration going up. I mean, we had getting back actually to claiming the not only the goodness but also the affordability of Danone white yogurt in Spain. I mean, the very first results are really encouraging. So it's only the very start. So don't want to boast about it. Don't put it in your model yet. But the first signs are really encouraging, and you see that in terms of penetration. You see that in terms of visibility of the brand. I think the other thing that is coming is, one thing is you normalize your complexities. You remove all the anecdotal things. I think the second thing that is very important is you don't recreate complexity for all. And you get into, yet again, a different degree of discipline. So if you look at global level, I think this year, we've reduced by almost, and don't hold me on the numbers, but I think we almost halved the innovations that we launched. We've significantly increased in Europe. The number of innovations that are multi-countries, which once again gives you both critical mass, but also a better capacity utilization. So you see also an appetite, an appetite for better leverage, which is moving in the right direction. It comes with a couple of things. It comes with leadership. So there is a very clear mandate that was given to the European leadership team. It comes with metrics as well. So it's the threshold you have in terms of size, in terms of margin, in terms of returns. It is about being much more robust in the way not only we do business case, but we do post-mortem onto the business case. So it's a whole. It's a whole new level of discipline that we put in the business. Should EDP altogether? I'm talking at world level because obviously we don't give margin details region by region. But should it be a double digit margin? Yes, it should be a double digit margin. It's gonna be a journey if you want to really rationalize your range. You want to start supporting your brands again. You want to drive the categories. Indeed, in places like Spain, we are the creators of the category, so we are responsible for the growth of the category. Sorry, long answer, but lots of passion for the category.
No, very important. But we're going to move to another category so that everybody gets a bit of his fair share. So specialized nutrition, and I'm not even going to start with China, which, by the way, you presented as well today, and it's on your website, and we'll discuss in a minute. But specialized nutrition, you saw a benefit of natality birth post-COVID in developed market, but we see that is now fading. And it's a category where, effectively, in developed market, we see that as a secular issue of a lower natality. So outside of China, how do you look at the opportunity of the category in terms of growth, and where are the avenues that you can the button that you can pull in order to keep to grow profitably?
So actually, outside China and in China, it's very similar in some ways, which is, I mean, it starts with the way we are going at a large part of specialized nutrition, which is IMF infant milk formula, because there is another part, which I'm sure we'll discuss later. The way we look at that market is, and going back to what are the benefit platforms for the consumer. So we don't look at it from an ingredient standpoint. We look at it from a feeding journey. We look at it from a growth journey. We look at it from a consumer or benefit platform. So yes, in a number of places, the birth rates are decreasing. But in parallel of that, the number of C-sections, to take one concrete example, is exploding. I mean, C-sections are going to be in the coming years over 30% of the birth for all kinds of reasons that vary from one region to the other. Well, there is a very simple thing about C-section is when a baby is born by C-section, the baby doesn't benefit from the gut flora of his mother. Or the gut flora is absolutely fundamental for health moving forward. Well, we have developed a clinically proven formula that basically helps baby born by C-section to catch up extremely fast on their microbiote, the gut health to catch up from what they missed from being born by C-section. That is a way to address a trend that is going very fast. I mean, same applies to people that are on our mixed feeding journeys. Same applies on allergies. So there are many growth segments in the market. Second, by driving benefit platform, actually you create growth opportunities that are not all contingent on the trend of natality. In some geographies, even with a trend that is decreasing, by the way, the penetration of the category remains limited. So there is also a penetration job to be done. But it starts with segmentation, benefits, and technology, by the way, which is proven and delivers on those benefits. And this is how you beat the trend. This is, by the way, how we have been beating in a very systematic way the trend in China, by offering very strong benefit anchored in very deep science, made available in a very convincing way to the consumer.
Maybe before we move to China, yes, just to round up, I think what you presented today, what you mentioned about the C-section is part of the pediatric range, so medical nutrition, which is about 40% of your business. Can you as well talk about some of the example on the adult side, which I think were as well quite convincing?
So actually C-section is part of our IMF range. We have in the medical product, we have two ranges. We have ranges for our infants. And there we have very, very sophisticated products and products that treat very severe allergies, products that treat metabolic disorders, products that treat major growth issues. And we have adult medical nutrition. And there we have a range of amazing products. I mean, we have tube feeding. And there we leverage the technology we have when you feed through the mouth and not through the perfusion, you keep the gut working and our unique ability to concentrate the protein, to combine that with the type of probiotic that you need to keep the gut feeding, the gut working when you are in major medical distress is making a huge difference to the recovery and to the patient's life. We have products that are medical nutrition for people that are under oncologic treatment, which is very, very complex products that are a mix of proteins, that are a mix of amino acids, that are a mix of all the things With a very simple, I mean, with a very complex and sophisticated, but very simple thing, which is if you're losing weight, if you're not properly fed, you won't support treatment, you won't be able to be exposed to very harsh treatment, you won't recover from surgery and treatment. So medical nutrition is becoming now a mandatory when it comes to oncology treatment. And there, we are capable of providing things that combine actually our science when it comes to protein, when it comes to nutrients, when it comes to probiotics, with our consumer science. Because very often when you're in chemo, things don't taste anymore, or they don't taste well, or they're not acceptable. So making very, very compact protein product, so that with very little effort, you can have all the nutrition you need and make it acceptable because you play on cooling effect, or you play on warming effect, or you play on some taste, making compliance easy and therefore making sure that people are eating what they need to eat to be ready for surgery, to recover from surgery, to be ready for chemo, to support chemo and to recover from chemo, is fundamentally important. And we share things in the field of brain health. So SUMMED, which is something that is patented. Actually, we are starting to roll it in a few states in the US, which is helping prevent memory loss. We have things that are fighting frailty. So we have deep science in our nutrition, which we combine, by the way, with our deep consumer science to serve the patients on things that are fundamental long-term trends. I mean, you have every year 20 million new cases of cancer. You have every year 12 million new cases of stroke. You have about 100 million people in the world that are living with, having had a stroke or suffering from the issues that are related to stroke. With an aging population, you have more and more issues of frailty. So sadly enough, you have a market that is growing very rapidly. The good news is we can do something about that. We can make a real difference in the life of the people with real proprietary technology and with all the consumer goods knowledge that we have coming from the rest of the business. So it's a very, very exciting field. But it's a field that is not a standalone field. I mean, everything we do from a protein compaction, obviously something that is traveling when we sell YoPro or HyPro. Everything we do in terms of deep analytics in water is obviously something that serves us across. All the knowledge of taste that we have created on our EDP, we leverage to make compliance to the food regime easy, because compliance is the key to recovery. So it's a super, it's a super exciting part of our portfolio. It's about 40% of our specialized nutrition growing very, very nicely and totally symbiotic with the rest of what we have. Huh?
Maybe if we touch upon China, I was going to ask if you still see premiumization in your portfolio, and then today Bruno presented the Ultra Premium Plus, so maybe can you talk about that in the context of China? And then can you also talk about in a market that probably will still see a low growth, how you see your share performance and what do we expect from the GB regulation as far as Danone portfolio is concerned?
So listen, all of that is related. The team has done a spectacular job in terms of GB registration, allowing us not only to keep going with the portfolio that we have, also to register a whole new pipeline of innovation with very, very advanced science. Some of it was already present in the market through international labels, but now we can sell it under China label. We will share tomorrow the Congress in Vienna, the next generation that will come to China, with a logic which is closer and closer and closer and closer to Western. And with a logic that is relevant to Chinese baby, relevant to Chinese consumer, fundamentally to address the very specific needs of Chinese baby, Chinese health, Chinese consumer. So we move from a portfolio that was very condensed to having the opportunity to expand our portfolio and start playing in a much more active way in the super premium segment of the market with technologies that are extraordinarily advanced. And with more to come in the coming years, as I said, we will reveal our next platform tomorrow in the Congress in Vienna. By the way, the platform, and it goes back also to what I said about the role of science. I mean, you try the product, and I was lucky to be able to try it before anybody else. I mean, it looks like our breast milk, smells like breast milk, it tastes like breast milk. It has a behavior, it has science in there, which is absolutely incredible. It's a mix of plenty of things, you have prebiotics, you have HMOs, you have lots of things. It is a really impressive product. So, long story short, but through managing our GBs fairly well, expand our portfolio, it gives us the opportunity to keep premiumizing and be stronger in the super premium segment. We have also the opportunity to further innovate in China, coming with our most advanced formulas in China. At a point in time where the overall GB registration is going to lead to, a consolidation of the market. Not everybody will have registration, which was the intent, I think, partly behind the registration. So you're going to see also the number of players in the market starting to reduce. So the mix of premiumization, the mix of value-adding benefits, the mix also of having a funnel of things while a number of players are contracting is making us confident on the way forward. Maybe one more point that is not only, by the way, on IMF, but is on our overall portfolio in China. We are, with what we are doing, through our health, through our sustainability, through innovation, contributing to the healthy and beautiful China agenda of the Chinese government. So in many ways, the double project of Danone, what we do and the way we do business at Danone, is very much echoing the sustainability and health ambition that you find today in China. We are innovating in China for China and for the world. Some of the things that we do in digital in China are absolutely leading edge, and we start doing them in China and then we roll them out in other places. I mean, you see, if you watch one of the presentations on the internet, we are doing things using DNA testing, which are really groundbreaking. I mean, by regulation, you can do them in China, you can not necessarily do them all over the world, but you go pretty far in terms of technology, in terms of what you bring to the consumer. Some of them, the DNA is in its infancy. But if you look at the stool tracker, it has a real impact in the business. So it's also applying very advanced technology, image analysis, artificial intelligence to the service of improving our business.
China, you also mentioned today the Maison relaunch, or let's say the with the reopening of China. So my question really is getting into waters, which I feel is sometimes a bit of the forgotten part of the business. This division that used to be one of the fastest growing in your portfolio, but obviously has been hit by COVID. So what do you, how do you see the opportunity for your business in water from a top line and margin perspective? Because we are quite well below the low to mid teens number that we saw in the past. And could you specifically speak about Europe, which I think is where you face a retail environment where there is a lot of value-driven competition. How do you get about your premiumization strategy for waters in Europe?
So let me start with Mizone, because you mentioned, I mean, you mentioned Mizone now, that Mizone seems to be going better. Nobody mentions Mizone anymore. So let me say a word on Mizone. We said on Mizone, Mizone was a good example of, I mean, one of those underperformers where we say, well, we're going to do a deep root cause analysis. We're going to try to understand what is not working well. We are going to do the work properly. And we believe, after our root cause analysis, that we can turn it around. So we went into understanding what we did wrong. It was a matter of the quality of our innovation. It was a matter of the way we were handling our water in the fridges. It was part of our incentive of our distribution network and the way we were distributing, I mean, managing our distribution network. So you end with irrelevant innovation in a fridge, or out of stock on the core, and your distributor stranded with cash that doesn't move. So we reworked the entire thing. We work a mix also, getting back to what can we say scientifically about the product, actually, and we can say things that are really can really exciting. And indeed, we relaunched, but it's not only a marketing launch. So we relaunched the entire business system behind Mizone since the China is open again. The results are very encouraging. So we'll see over the long term. But you were asking about green shoots earlier. That is certainly an encouraging green shoot. So I just wanted to talk about that one, because that's one that was coming very often in the past. And as we see green shoots there, I don't want this to be totally unnoticed. If you look at our water and our water portfolio, it's fundamentally two worlds. Okay. You have safe drinking countries, safe water drinking, and you have unsafe. Two different business models. Two different things. I mean, unsafe, it's Indonesia, it's Mexico. Europe is our safe drinking water. In safe drinking water countries, the name of the game is premiumization. So the name of the game is getting back to the roots of the brand. Evian, everybody forgets, but Evian was discovered as a medicinal water. In the midst of the 18th century, it's a gentleman that settled on the lake, started drinking the water, discovered that it was doing actually great things to his kidney and to his liver. And this is how, by the way, Evian turned into a terminal station. Evian water was sold in a pharmacy until 1964. I mean, if you are in France, Evian is the water you give to the babies. Actually, there was a newspaper article today. Nicole Kidman, who's in the Cannes Festival, ordered 40 bottles of Evian because this is the only thing that she would use to wash her hair. It's the first time people are washing their hair, but it proves the purity and the quality of the brand. I mean, joke aside, it is a premium water, and the strategy there is premiumization. So being on the tables in the right place, being in the right restaurants, being also obviously in the trade, but claiming again the benefits and the differentiation of Evian. Evian goes for 15 years through the Alps. We started protecting the microbiome of Evian 30 years ago. So, I mean, working with all the municipalities around the inclusion on a pretty large footage, to prevent artificialization of soil, to prevent soil on the soil, to make sure that the manure of the cars go to metallizer, not to the soils. So to make sure that 15 years down, when the water has gone through all the layers of the mountain, it's absolutely pure and unadulterated. I mean, you take tap water. I mean, tap water goes through a multiplicity of filtering and treatment, including, by the way, some pretty violent chemical treatments, the traces of which you find in your glass. And there was a study published 2 weeks ago. There, in all honesty, we didn't do a particularly good job at claiming our difference. So name of the game, and I'm taking Evian, but I could take Volvic, where we are doing a spectacular job in places like Germany. The name of the game is to reclaim the unicity of the water, to drive the premiumness of the water, to drive the differentiation of the water. And this is what you're going to see us doing in the coming months and years. I mean, should the margin of water be double digits? Yes, I mean, yes, it should. Part of it is linked to volume, but part of it is linked to being really disciplined in reclaiming what makes us unique. I could, in the same way, talk about Volvic and the unique impact of volcanoes. I mean, the way we've expressed the mix of Volvic in Germany, which is the unicity of the waters from the volcano, together with packaging, by the way, that is fully that is made of recycled bottles, makes a real difference. I mean, when we were treating the analyst yesterday, we had a water sommelier to explain the difference between waters. I mean, there is a real difference, not only in the absolute qualities of water, I mean, levels of salt. By the way, Evian is low salt, so it's absolutely right for low salt regime. Also, the taste of the water, the content in minerals of the water, the types of minerals, also the type of bacteria you find in our water. Our water is totally unadulterated, and that makes a huge difference. So we need to be, sorry, I'm very long, I'm very passionate about that category. This is a category where it's an amazing category. By the way, it has enabled us to develop amazing technologies. I mean, the analytics capabilities that we have developed out of our waters are just, I mean, world-class and travel across the entire business. All the packaging capabilities that we have developed for waters are obviously applying to the entire business. But we need to reclaim better than what we have done today, the premiumness of and unicity or uniqueness of mineral water.
Antoine, you mentioned last year 25% of your portfolio needed to be improving in performance or potentially exiting. So you mentioned MyZone. You also have mentioned that you have an ambition to exit Russia and as well the strategic review of the Horizon mix. So just wanted to know where we are on the last two. Can we expect an end to that process? And then what about the rest of the portfolio? How do you have assessed it now?
So maybe to start where I mean from the start. So what we said last year, yes, I mean we qualified 25% of the portfolio as underperforming. And what we said at the time is for each and every of them, we're going to do root cause analysis and see whether we can fix it, whether fixing it is making sense from a return standpoint, whether this brand or that brand has a role to play in our long-term strategy, has a role to play in our portfolio. So looking at it from a return standpoint, from a performance standpoint, from a strategy standpoint, which is the job that we have been doing over the last number of months, with good progress. And I was mentioning MyZone is a good example. It was a very visible one because everybody was asking questions about that. But it's not the only one. On some other things, we decided that the best way was an exit. We haven't been very noisy, but we have been actually very active and very systematic in what we have been doing. I mean, if you look back, we've totally unwound our relationship with Menu, which was not totally insignificant. We have put our Danone Waters in Argentina into a joint venture. By the way, it's a good example of the philosophy of what we are trying to do. We could have decided that we sell it as fast as possible to give a sign, as some were suggested or suggesting. We thought that rather than giving a sign, we'd go for value creation. And the best way to do value creation in that case was to do a joint venture with CCU in Argentina, whereby both of us can extract the maximum of the portfolio we have. I mean, we had a fantastic portfolio of brands, but we didn't have the distribution system. Our distribution system wasn't efficient given the size of our brands. You marry the two, you start creating value, so it took us more time. But we did it properly. On both Russia and on Russia EDP and Horizon Organic and Wallaby, we are moving at pace, but we are moving in a disciplined way. So in a way that for Russia takes into account the circumstances, I mean, it's extremely regulated. You want to do it properly. You want to make sure that wherever you end is aligned to your values, is aligned also to the interest of your people and the interest of the company. So you do that in a way that is, very methodical, very systemic, very disciplined. And with less constraints, you do the same with Horizon and Wallaby. So we are moving according to plan. We are moving at pace. We will go as slow as fast as possible, as slow as necessary. Because what matters in the end is creating value out of what we are doing, not gaining 2 weeks here or a month or there. So we are happy, by the way, with the way the process are ongoing. So. When we have news, we'll give you news, but the pace is good.
Antoine, I think we have a few minutes left. So I'm going to, basically the big picture question, if I zoom out of what we just discussed, gross margin is about 400 basis points below its peak. Is there any structural reason why that should not, you know, be the case that you come back here, especially if you think about what you presented today, the willingness to drive innovation and to drive valorization of that innovation. And therefore, when I think about your moderate margin expansion over the coming years versus what could be several hundred basis points of gross margin recovery, by the way, as well, because you had been under pressure, like if we think about Waters, but even dairy because of COVID, not just inflation, even prior to the inflation. So at which point, obviously, you mentioned the reinvestment that you wanted to do. I think I heard R&D, A&P, competitiveness. But at which point, you know, you think you can pile up the top line and maybe give a bit more at the bottom line?
So there are two questions in your questions. I think the first point, and let me get back to the guidance and to the underpinning of the guidance. I mean, the prior guidance, or before New Danone, in some ways, the alpha and the omega of the company was reaching a percentage EBIT by a given date. With all the consequences it entails in terms of the way you invest, in terms of the way you are, the balance between tactical and strategic, in terms of the way you develop the portfolio. With new guidance that we gave, fundamentally, we gave a business model guidance, okay? So it's growing in a competitive way, doing it in a healthy way, so of the components of volume and mix, making sure that we reinvest into our brands, being frugal on the rest, leveraging the rest, so that you have the moderate the moderate margin improvement, which, and by the way, having a strong hand on ROIC, which, by the way, if you have a cash flow model or discounted cash flow model, is creating immense value if you do it in a very systematic way. So that's the that is the path we have taken. Obviously, if you are better in the way you drive your volume mix, you create gross margin. Because with volume, there is a leverage effect, there is a flow through, because there are indeed opportunities that are coming with the mix, and we will keep working our mix practically. This gives you the opportunity to have a model that becomes self-funding, so you can reinvest in a competitive way, both in term in your A&P, also in some of your capabilities. And indeed, we said we reinvest in A&P, we reinvest in R&D, and we reinvest in data and IT, and have some of it flowing through the bottom line. That is the cycle in which we have started to engage ourselves, and that's the model that we want to deliver in a consistent way. Name of the game for the moment is not more or less. Let's start by being consistent in what we deliver, and deliver it over time. If we create immense value, then it's there.
All right, excellent. Well, thank you so much, Antoine, for this discussion. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. Goodbye.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.